So tonight is, in a way, an odd topic. I'm going to talk about sensuality. And sensuality as it relates to Buddhism. And I think the first thing I want to presence is that we live in a historical era in which both the word sensuality and the word intimacy have been completely sexualized, almost to the point that they're used as euphemisms for sex. It says a lot that we have to use euphemisms for sex, that we can't talk about it directly. But also I'd say that I think there's an element of, how can I say, when people are pursuing sexual liberation, there's a kind of conventional view that liberation is the opposite of discipline, you know? And in fact, we know, with practice, that that's not the case, that in fact, discipline and liberation go hand in hand. That's the very teaching of Buddhism. Both intimacy and sensuality require discipline. Both of them are disciplines in a way. They require tremendous attention. They require vulnerability. So they're hard. And I think there's a natural tendency in this culture to devalue them and not embrace the challenge that they pose. So I want to, as it were, rescue the word sensuality a bit and rescue it from the narrow confines of sexuality, as if one can only be sensual there and then one's not in the rest of one's life, that kind of thing. So what is sensuality? Oh, yes. Goodbye, Mira. It starts with sense experience. And I'll say, first of all, we learn in school about our five senses. And, of course, the five senses are important. But the body is full of senses, internal and external senses, where we pick up information about the world around us, about others around us, and about our own experience in so many ways. But let's just take a simple example of looking at flowers, so step one would be even just remembering to look at the flowers, or even just remembering to be there at all, to notice them at all, And this is where mindfulness is very helpful. Mindfulness is actually a powerful practice that you might say is a kind of gateway into sensuality. So then suppose we notice the flowers, do we just look, oh, nice flowers, and then we're done? It's almost a kind of Zen koan. How long does it take to look at a flower? How long does it take really to take in all the beauty of a flower? And then once we look at the flower, what are we doing? Are we looking at it, taking it in, and then thinking about it? Oh, nice flowers, we're analyzing or going into story about it. Or are we feeling what it is? Are we feeling the effect on our body of taking in that beauty? And once we're at the point of feeling in our body that experience, being with our bodily experience of that, that's sensuality. Another example is the breath. Where in Buddhism we're told pay attention to the breath. And of course it's a challenge, especially for people starting, it's just this binary, am I paying attention to it or not? As we pay attention more, then we can start to notice the quality of the breath, the feeling of the breath. When one spends a lot of time with the breath, it's very subtle, but it's almost as if the breath becomes delicious. There's something subtle but incredibly pleasurable simply about breathing. And again, it's a felt sense in the body. And so, of course, we have all these experiences during the day, We brush our teeth. We shower. We drink water when we're thirsty. We eat when we're hungry, you know. Are we there when our life is happening, you know? Are we having the experience that our body is having in all those experiences? Or is the body having one experience and the mind is somewhere else, you know? You know, to some extent, are we having the experience of our body? That's the question of sensuality, but it's also really the question of Buddhism, you know? We're certainly not being Buddhist when our mind is somewhere else. And so part of sensuality is about external senses, sensing external pleasure, external experiences. But a great portion of it is internal. There's the sensuality of the emotions. And it's a funny thing about emotions that even the quote-unquote negative emotions, you know, it's not necessarily fun to feel grief and shame and rage and all these things, but there's vitality in them. You know, there's something in vitality, and if we just allow ourselves to feel it, we feel the emotion, but we also feel the vitality of it. This is a culture that tends to want to dial back the feeling on emotions, you know, ideally ego wants to experience only the positive things and not the negative things, and you can't have that. Basically, it's like we all have a dial inside of us, you know, feeling a lot or feeling very little. And this society tends to encourage people to dial down that dial. And another funny thing that happens with emotions is that we turn emotions into story. We leave emotion and go into story, internal story, rather than feel the emotion directly in our bodies. Story is, you might say, is a way to control. It's ego's attempt to control reality, control experience, you know, where the truth of it is that ego does not control the emotions, you know. Ego is not in control of its ongoing experience. And so you might say that sensuality, in a way, is just, it involves a deep allowing ourselves to be as we are, allowing our emotions to be as we are. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the topic of belonging, this very interesting question with relation to the emotions. Do my emotions belong to me, or do I belong to my emotions? You know, and how do I situate myself with respect to them? So it's a paradox that you might even say sensuality is a kind of discipline, and in many ways it's not all that different from the discipline, say, of Zen Buddhism. And of course, it seems superficially funny to say that the Zen monks lived extremely austere lives. They were celibate. They had a minimum of possessions. They wore rags. They ate very simple food. But they took extraordinary pleasure in sweeping the yard, in gardening, in bird songs, in the most ordinary everyday experiences. And in fact, they were devoted to being fully present to all these transitory everyday experiences. You know, and so in some ways, Zen was an incredibly sensual tradition, just not in our conventional way of thinking about it. And I'll say, you know, so our internal senses are certainly about, you know, at one level, it's about our emotions. And certainly it's true that, you know, there are things that we do that are physically pleasurable, but it's also true that, for example, integrity is pleasurable. When I'm in integrity, when I'm acting with authenticity, that's something that feels good in my body, you know. When I'm acting with compassion, when I am humble, forgiving, you know, all these things, you know, all the quote unquote, you know, ways that a good person is supposed to be, you know, I mean, the superficial way, you know, is to think about it, well, I need to follow the rules, but all those actually feel very good in my body. And when I'm being petty or arrogant or something like that, that doesn't feel good. I feel off my center. I feel I'm not drawing from my depths, you know. For me, one of the touchstones about Buddhism is what is sometimes called the four illimitable minds, the four mind states without limit, which are love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And in the Buddhist understanding, these are the foundation of our nature, the bedrock of our nature. And so when I'm acting from love and compassion, I'm acting from my deepest depths, you know. And there's something that feels incredibly good about that, you know. Even if compassion is, you know, urging me to do something that's inconvenient or, you know, so forth at the surface level. And so it's almost this paradox, you know. You could say Buddhism is a very advanced and very technical kind of hedonism, you know, pursuing really these deepest pleasures rather than the surface pleasures. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. First, I'll share it with the folks on Zoom. So I just posted the quote sheet in the chat. And for folks in the room, you get a physical quote sheet. So the top quote is from Basho, the great Zen poet. The temple bell stops, but the sound keeps coming out of the flowers. Love that image. From Thoreau, who we don't often think of as the most cuddly, sensual kind of person, we are all sculptors and painters, and our material is our own flesh and blood and bone. You know? And it's a fascinating question. What is it to think of yourself as a work of art? What is it to move through your day holding yourself as a work of art? Of course, Papa Walt is here. I believe in the flesh and the appetite. Seeing, hearing, feeling are miracles in each part, and tag of me is a miracle. Divine I am inside and out, and I make holy whatever I touch or am touched by. The scent of these armpits and aroma finer than prayer. This head more than churches, Bibles, and all the creeds. Gotta love Walt. From Hopkins, there lives the dearest freshness deep down things. D.T. Suzuki says, each moment is absolute, alive, significant. The frog leaps, the cricket sings, a dewdrop glitters on the lotus leaf, a breeze passes through the pine trees, and the moonlight falls on the murmuring stream. Rilke says, physical pleasure is sensual experience no different from pure seeing or the pure sensation with which a fine fruit fills the tongue. It is a great unending experience which is given us, a knowing of the world, a fullness and the glory of knowing. And not our acceptance of it is bad. The bad thing is that most people misuse and squander this experience and apply it as a stimulant at the tired spot of their lives and as distraction instead of rallying toward exalted moments. That one is really subtle. D.H. Lawrence says, the profoundest of all sensualities is the sense of truth, and the next deep sensual experience is the sense of justice. A couple from Hesse, one from Siddhartha. So she thoroughly taught him that one cannot take pleasure without giving pleasure, and that every gesture, every caress, every touch, every glance, every last bit of the body has its secret, which brings happiness to the person who knows how to wake it. She taught him that after a celebration of love, the lovers should not part without admiring each other, without being conquered or having conquered, so that neither is bleak or glutted or has the bad feeling of being used or misused. You know, it's funny when you compare the Christian tradition and the Buddhist tradition. You know, the Christian tradition is so insistent that Jesus, of course, was celibate his whole life. And, you know, we know, you know, according to the Buddha legend, the Buddha married, he had children, you know, he had the whole sensual experience. Hermann Hesse also says, sensuality isn't worth a hair more than spirituality, and it's the same the other way around. It's all one. Everything is equally good. Whether you embrace a woman or make a poem, it's the same. So long as the main thing is there, the love, the burning, the emotion, it doesn't matter whether you are a monk on Mount Athos or a man about town in Paris. From Shunryo Suzuki, simply, the world is its own magic. From the Zen teacher Charlotte Joko Beck, when we become open awareness, our ability to do necessary thinking gets sharper and our sensory input gets brighter and clearer. After a certain amount of sitting, the world looks brighter, sounds are sharper, and there's a richness of sensory input, which is just our natural state if we are not blocking out our experience with tense, worrying minds. And it absolutely is true. The quality of the world is so dependent on the quality of our attention. You know, when I'm not paying very close attention, the world is dead and lifeless. And then the more vitally I can pay attention, the world bursts into life, you know. James Baldwin says, to be sensual, I think, is to respect and rejoice in the force of life, life itself, and to be present in all that does, from the effort of loving to the breaking of bread. A famous one from Thich Nhat Hanh, walk as if you are kissing the earth with your feet. Jack Kornfield said, I saw the whole idea of spiritual renunciation as a kind of joke, trying to make oneself let go of ordinary life and pleasures. In fact, nirvana is so open and joyful and is so much more than any of the small pleasures we grasp after. You don't renounce the world, you gain the world. This lovely quote from Orson Scott Card. She worked her toes into the sand, feeling the delicious pain of the friction of the tiny chips of silicon against the tender flesh between her toes. That's life. It hurts. It's dirty. And it feels very, very good. Sharon Salzberg says, no matter how much we want it to be otherwise, the truth is that we are not in control of the unfolding of our experiences. Tara Brock says, this unconditioned happiness or well-being is a flavor of awakening. It arises when we trust our essence as awareness and know that this entire living world is part of our heart. Adi Ashanti said, to be intimate is to find the silence, the space that everything is happening in. Brené Brown says, I don't have to chase extraordinary moments to find happiness. It's right in front of me if I'm paying attention and practicing gratitude. Alexander Kata-Harris says, many lovers are off to the races. Hurtling toward orgasm, they miss the excitement of sensual meanderings along the way. And really, in a parallel way, I think so much of this society is that off to the racing, you know, chasing the climax, chasing the big experience, and missing everyday life, you know. Lebo Grand says simply, sensuality is not a sexual invitation, it's a depth invitation. And Ruth Gendler says, sensuality does not wear a watch, but she always gets to the essential place on time.